Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
Once upon a time, there was a school, a true school, and the true school served the one purpose of introducing individuals to the possibility of discovering a completely different order of life within themselves that would put them in a natural and new order in the world in which they lived. But getting into the school was very difficult because there was a requirement, and the requirement seemed so simple on one hand, and yet so many failed to understand and then be able to report properly to get a passing grade in order to enter into this school, from which, once they understood the first lesson, all else would become evident to them in the time that they gathered the knowledge and applied it to their day-to-day lives so as to reap the fruit of new understanding, which in the end is everything. And this school would from time to time accept students, and then they would be put immediately to a field test. And that's literally what it was a field test. Because just outside the doors of this school that was located in a very special place where certain conditions were required for it to be able to administer the test, just outside the large doors of this school, there was a huge field. And the students would be sent out into the field where they would be told they had to sit quietly for 3 days. And at the end of the 3 days, they were to come back and they were to report to the teacher what it was they had learned from their 3 days in the field. And our hero, because we always have a hero, we'll make it a heroine. Our heroine, the lady that was the hero, she came to this school and knocked on the doors and walked inside. And no more did she walk inside than some student came running from the field outside through the doors going, "This is bogus." "This is ridiculous." And she stood there from time to time. People would run through and they'd be yelling or shouting. They'd be unhappy about something. And she asked if she could be admitted. And he said, "Of course you can. All you have to do is go out this field, sit there for 3 days quietly, and then come back to me and tell me what you've learned." She said, "That shouldn't be a problem." So she goes out, and there's a bench, and there's some places, and she sits down in this field. Now, the thing about the field is that it was a magic field. It was something that was under the direction, if you will, of the individual who was running the school. And what was magical about the field was that it was filled. You know, a field, if you picture in your mind a field, you've got, you know, the straw, you've got the oats and the wheat and the grasses, and you've got the trees and you've got the flowers and you've got all the business there. But this field that she went out to sit in, by a certain act, it was absolutely still. Nothing moved in the field. And the first 20 minutes that she was sitting out there, she was thinking, "This is fantastic. Look how beautiful this is. Look at the color there. Look at the way the trees are shaped. Look at that bird. I don't know why it's not moving, but look at that bird." within about an hour, she began to feel very uncomfortable in the field. And within 2 hours, she could barely sit still. And by 3 hours, she went running back into the school and said, "This is bogus. There's nothing to learn out there. Stupid test. It must be a stupid school. You administer stupid test, how smart can the school be?" And she left. But something was bothering her big time. So 3 days later, she came back and knocked at the door. I try to put in sound effects whenever I can. Teacher said, "Come in." She said, "I would like to take the test again. Is that permissible?" He said, "Oh, of course it is. You can take the test as many times as you want to. That's part of what the test is." She said, "Really?" She says, "Yeah, nobody passes this the first time. It's impossible." She said, "Really?" She says, "Oh, yeah." He said, "People go out there, and let me say, ask you," he said, "did you just love being out there at first?" "I did," she said. "Of course you did." He said, "Please, help yourself." Out she goes into the field. Now, because I have 3 hours of material to condense in a very short time, I must move the story along. She passes the test because she comes back in after 3 days. But this is after she went away several times. You get the whole story. Comes back in and she says, I understand now." He said, "You do?" He said, "Yes." She said, I recognize completely now. The only thing that troubles me wherever I am is the movement of my own mind. I see it completely. I never could have seen it if I weren't sitting in that field where everything was still, because when I first saw everything so still, I thought this was lovely. But soon the stillness began to bother me. And at first I thought that the stillness was something that should be resisted and resented, but why should stillness bother me? And little by little I began to see that the whole thing, everything, I couldn't find one example in my life. Each time I left, I started thinking through it. And all I could see was that wherever I was, it didn't matter whether things were moving or they were still. It was the movement of my own mind that made problems, that made me feel bad. And so I want now, if that's the case, she said, I want to spend the rest of my life understanding why that is the way it is. Why should my own mind be an enemy to me, to my happiness? And the teacher said, such is a question asked by those who are ready to learn great answers. And so it is that we're going to look at this whole problem that you have, all human beings have, that they don't understand that they have, because part of their own misunderstanding, moment to moment to moment, is that as the mind creates disturbance in its movement for the reasons that it moves, then the mind causes more disturbance for itself by moving to something else that it believes will fix the problem. So the mind is in a constant state of agitation, seeking a way in which to resolve itself through the very activity that is its disturbance. But that mind cannot see itself because its own content is so filled with objects, and I've used the word before, with thoughts, images, experiences, so full of things that it has a never-ending supply of things to analyze, to consider, to look at, as this movement's taking place. And the more it tries to figure out who and what it is based on that movement, the more disturbed it is. The more disturbed it is, the faster it moves. The faster it moves, the more reason it has for blaming the world around it. Now, how many of you are convinced, and you ought to all raise your hands, that the problems that you have in life have to do with the thing, with the fact that things just won't stay still? You know, you just get it down, man. He's just learned how to be the right kind of person. Right, ladies? I got him trained. At work, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel financially. Thank God. A don't move tunnel. And light don't move. My body, it's finally whatever it's supposed to be doing, it's doing it. And so now, whatever it was that I was doing up to that, it becomes a religion. And so you have psychopathy, because you have the incessant need for a person believing that they have to control the movement of things if they're going to be in control of their own life. Because they have mistaken the movement of the mind and its relationship with the movement of things for the movement of things itself. And it is not the movement of life that creates problems for human beings. Every movement in life is exactly what it should be according to the conditions that produce it. And no one analyzing conditions, no one looking at what has happened, can change what has happened by the movement of their own mind. So that not wanting something, which is what the mind is all the time occupied with, is the mind's movement in an attempt to regain control that it believed it had that it never did in the first place.
Love. The brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
If you can even begin to see the fact of what I'm saying to you, that the sole source of your suffering, the sole cause for conflict in your life, the sole cause of it is due to the movement of your own mind. Because if you can see that, the sole cause of your unhappiness is due to the movement of your mind, then and only then do you know where it is that you must work. Now we have to do some other kind of work. We have to find out for ourselves, well, what is the cause of all this movement? Because if I look, let's say, have you ever been sitting at home by yourself? You have your curds and whey in front of you. Metaphorically speaking, you know, whatever your curds and whey are, you know, your pizza, your TV, whatever it is, you're dreaming about something. You've got a vacation planned, and things couldn't be better. And you tell me where the problem is. You tell me where the unhappiness is in your life. And I'll tell you where it is. The mind says it's in the fact that this happened that way or that didn't go the way I wanted it. And I'm saying that nothing in the movement of the world is the cause of your unhappiness, but the movement of your mind as it considers those things against what it says happiness is, there you have the cause of unhappiness. There you have the cause of all conflict, regardless of what the mind is comparing in itself. And to understand that, to begin to see, gosh, if my mind is still, why do you think people drink? Why do you think people spend hours and hours in front of television? Why do you think people get caught up in anything that they do? It's because they're looking for a way for them to have a moment of a still mind. So it is with people who go out into nature, who run, marathon runners. People do these things because they finally bring themselves through a certain point of attention to a way in which their mind just stops moving and there's bliss in it at that level for the person. But such exercises are futile because they don't produce an understanding of what causes the mind to be constantly agitating itself and therefore the person identified with the agitation. All it does is produce people who become psychopathic, literally obsessed with one thing or another in life because they extract a moment from it that gives them a bit of peace. So I want to say now, because I have so much to talk to you about, I want to talk about what is actually the root of this movement inside of us that causes all of this disturbance. Can you see that would be important? Can you first see, okay, my mind, it just runs here, runs there, jumps around, and if it's not on anything particular and it's agitated, well, I always believe that the agitation that I have is due to what my mind blames the agitation on. But now I'm beginning to see, because I've answered the agitation 5 million times, new plans, new ways of being, new scopes of view, everything, and nothing changes the inherent agitation. Well, the mind, the man is saying the mind itself, that its movement causes this, and that if I can understand the root cause of this movement, then perhaps I'll have at least something true to work on. And that's what we're going to do. So to understand the root cause of this movement requires a great effort on your part, because you're going to have to put things together that the mind generally doesn't put together, because first of all, it never examines itself. So now these are words. And I urge you not to take the words and then build something out of the words. I'm asking you to look into yourself, into your life as I speak, so that you can do, while we're talking and later, the proper investigative work, so you can see for yourself whether or not this idea holds true. Not that the idea itself is the truth, but that the idea points to relationships inside of you where you can experience the truth of the words for yourself. And that's an essential difference. That way you don't make a god out of something or someone. You don't have a teaching that becomes your whole life. That's not what you're here for. You're here to discover for yourself, within yourself, the truth. The truth sets you free. You have to have a relationship with the truth for it to do that. Thought is not in relationship with anything except the past that has produced it. Period. The past has no freedom in it. The root cause of the movement of the mind, go slow now, is desire. And the thing that's unusual and interesting about it, that which causes all the movement of the mind, is that When I speak of desire, and I want you to throw away what you think of. You think of desire, and you think of like looking longingly at a woman or a Pepsi Cola or pizza or whatever it is that when you equivocate desire, that's not what I'm talking about, although those are forms of desire. We are created to commune. Human beings are created to be lovers. It's in every fiber of every atom of our being to love and to want to be loved. There's not one part of us that doesn't have that in it. It's God's nature itself. It's the nature of the divine itself. But in this world and in all creations, there is this activity that we think of and call desire, where something we'll call desire is always searching for the desired. That's what it does. That's what it does. Desire searches for the desired. And in that activity, at the level of the mind, it requires that the mind, being seated with this essential desire, this essential need to be one with, to merge in, to unite with, it's always looking for that which it is going to unite with. That's what it does. Now, the problem is that the mind doesn't understand its own content. It doesn't understand how it works. It doesn't even understand what it is or its role in the life of a being. And when I was thinking about this, to make the example, I couldn't escape it. The story of Cinderella, which I don't know, frankly, I don't know the name of the person who wrote it, but it's a deeply esoteric spiritual tale. First of all, Cinderella is a kind of a marriage of names of, you could say, if you wanted to translate it, Lady of the Ashes. And ashes being that which has been spent, but out of the ashes the phoenix rises. So there's the promise of something new in the idea of Cinderella, something that burned bright, that became ash, and then had to start over again. And if you don't know the story of Cinderella, I have to go through it quickly for you. Cinderella, her father was a wealthy nobleman. And something happened to him. He died, and into his house moved he was married to her stepmother. Cinderella's mother was not her original mother. So first we have the idea that into her father's house came an imposter. And, of course, she had her offspring with her, the evil sisters. And that's connected with parts in us, stepmother, parts of the sisters inside of our father's house, inside of our true self, inside of our life. And that they made Cinderella, who was actually the true inheritor of that house, the slave of the house. Just as we are the slave of that which we believe we have to serve because of circumstances. Conditions don't let us see it any other way. And then you have the idea that in this country, there was the prince and the king, and it was time for him to marry and to take into the grand kingdom that held her father's house that which would make her royalty, make someone a queen. And so the word went out that there was going to be a great ball where this prince, where love would look for its beloved. Where love would look for its beloved. And in the story, everybody's getting ready, but Cinderella can't get ready, and the sisters, everybody pushing her, because they're going to marry the love. The evil is going to become the beloved to the lover. That's their intention. And they don't care what they do to Cinderella. Cinderella, on the other hand, is going through this terrible process where she really wants to go, but she's not going to get there. And then intervention. The godmother, the fairy godmother, comes and uses the animals, which have to do with certain aspects of the human character, uses the animals to produce a very specific gown and a coach, but it can't stay in reality. It can't remain, just as we can't keep in place the things that we try to produce for ourselves. And she goes to the ball, and if you know the story, what happens? Bells ring. Love at first sight. The prince and Cinderella, they're just drawn to one another. And she's so innocent and beautiful. He doesn't know what to do. And then you know what happens next, don't you?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
What happens next is that 12 o'clock strikes, and she's got to be home by 12, and she goes running away, and as she's running down the stairs, off of her feet come one glass slipper. Now, why does everything disappear? The coach, the clothes, everything, but the one glass slipper doesn't disappear. Did you ever ask yourself that question? You have, haven't you? It's bothered millions of people for millions of years. I'm telling you now why. Because the glass slipper represents purity, and meaning purity of mind. The shoes always represented the person's psychology in esoteric teachings. So here you have pure psychology, purity, and purity can't disappear. Now, love has that which it can know the beloved through. It's looking for that which fits into this purity. And it goes looking everywhere, doesn't it? And tries to put this shoe on everybody's foot. How many of you think to yourself, well, I know it wouldn't go on mine. And it didn't go on anybody's foot, not anybody in the kingdom. And in the movie anyway, the stepsisters, they're just trying to shove their foot into it. You know, big bulbous foot hanging out of a glass slipper. And then what happens? Cinderella tries the slipper on. Perfect fit. And love finds its beloved. And a marriage takes place. I tell you, that is the whole story in a human being. only the human being is in the hands of the stepmother and the stepsisters, and actually have become that to some extent, not understanding what is taking place. Because I'm now back to what I said, that the only problem there is, the only trouble we have is that we don't understand the movement of our mind. The troubles in our lives had to do with the movement of our mind. Now, what does that mean relative to Cinderella? What is it that your mind is always doing? What's the nature of this movement other than never-endingly falling on this, that, or the other? According to the way we see it, life brings this. And when life brings this, my mind only knows one thing towards it. Now listen, you must come awake. In the moment that the mind falls upon the event that it objectifies in thought, or it falls upon its own thought that is an object. Do you understand that? That thought makes objects of events? Yes? In that moment, what is the active force? Desire. The active force is desire. How do I know that? Well, you tell me. What is the one movement you have towards whatever it is that you think or see in the world? I don't want it, or I want it. You can't think of one instance, you can't think of anything that your mind ever falls upon that doesn't have in the instance of falling upon it and unseen to you the actual search for something to fall upon, that essential activity of I want it, yes, that, oh, I want that, or oh, I hate that, I don't want that. And not wanting is as much a part of desire as wanting is. Because you can't not want something unless you already want something. So what you don't want is simply an opposite of that which you have named as being the source of your happiness. So not wanting whatever the mind falls on, I know that shouldn't, how many of you know this? That shouldn't be happening. No, 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 no. That's desire. But the question is, what's causing all that agitation in the mind? Is it the fact that that's taking place, that he said this or she didn't give you that? Is that the cause of the agitation? No, that's not the cause of the agitation. The cause of the agitation is that inside of the human mind, moment to moment to moment, so to speak, it's literally looking for something by which to know itself through. It's looking for a way to commune. The mind is looking for a way to commune. The root of it is this need to become one with something. That's the root of it. But when that root of it is handed off, and it is, then you have a mind, and listen to this because it's so important to understand if you're going to catch what we're discussing, that in the movement of the mind, it can't see that it is looking for union by division. When the mind says, he shouldn't be like that, what is it really saying in its movement? It's saying that that which I have decided he is doing is moving against that which I know he ought to do so I can be happy. Isn't that what it's doing? Or it looks at us and says, I love that. What's it saying? It's saying that what my mind is now on and the feeling that it's generating is that at last this is how things should be. And it looks for a way to unite itself. And this is so important to see if you can. It looks for a way to unite itself by first dividing itself into what it desires. Is it too subtle for you? Look, can anything that is essentially apart from something else be united with it? Or is the fact that it's essentially apart keep it from ever having union? And I was thinking, you know, one of the big problems that we all have is that we were never taught, because the world doesn't teach it, we were never taught the nature of union. We were never taught the actual nature of what the meaning of something is. Because whenever there is union, there is meaning therein. That those instances in which we go out and our lives are essentially from the time we're small, we're educated, aren't we? We're taught what it means to learn. We're taught that if we want to know this, then we have to know that. That's how we're taught. To know this, to know algebra, we must know math. To know science, biology, we must know the interior of a plant. So that our lives are essentially given to us in a form where everything that we're taught to find the meaning in things by thinking about them apart from the thing we're thinking about. How many of you can see what I'm saying? That we know the meaning of something not through what it is in itself, but through the approximations of things like it that are associated with it. So we call learning, and for instance, learning math, learning any science, you never learn the thing itself. You learn everything that leads up to understanding that thing through associations. And I'm saying to you that the love and the lover, that is not through association, that's through a certain union. We don't know that the meaning of something can't be found by thinking about it, that love isn't found in thought. That no movement of the mind will ever bring it peace. It's impossible. So, if you're following this, the question is, well, where then is this union that I'm looking for? See, that's what's hard to get across to you at this point. You don't know that your mind never stops moving because you're identified with all of its movement. And because you don't know that it's never-endingly moving, you don't understand that the reason it's constantly moving is that it's actually looking for itself. That's what it's doing. It's actually looking for itself. And that's the essential paradox in spirituality. That the mind never stops looking for itself, and the very act of looking for itself requires that it be apart from what it's looking at. So every object that it makes by which to know itself, it's separated itself from, so there can't be union. And yet it continues to strive for union and finds a sensation of it momentarily, because when it objectifies a condition or parts of its own consciousness, when it objectifies it, that object is loaded with all the content of its own past, its experience. And it takes that moment in which there is that familiarity with it, whether it hates it as a familiarity or loves it as a familiarity, and it calls that the union. But it's not the union, it's the antithesis of union. Because it's something that has been pushed together. Either driven together or driven apart by the activity of desire itself. Not wanting it or wanting it. And it's a torment unto itself. It is. It's a torment unto itself. Now, how does a person proceed if they actually begin to realize, you know, I can see what he said is true. My mind is always entertaining one thing or the other for the sake of learning something about myself. But the more I try, the further I get away from it. So now, where's the answer?
Here, Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
And this is where it becomes really, really beautiful to me. Because if the movement of my mind, and God knows, how many of you have a pretty a mover and a groover in there? You know, move, and then it can't stand moving anymore, and then it's, I don't want to move, and then it eats something and goes to sleep. And then it doesn't stop moving. Union, love, the meaning that the self searches for in its ignorance of its own activity, that meaning is only found in stillness. That union is only found in stillness. And confounding to our present consciousness is the fact that all we know as love, all we know as union, is the sensation produced by the movement of the mind that gloms onto something and momentarily is sated by that relationship. And such a mind doesn't know. It doesn't know where to look. And why? That's why you see people there become bitter and angry and frustrated, and they become hardened. Why? Because they continue to be frustrated by the movement of their own mind until finally they realize that they become absolute cynics. Because nothing the mind moves towards brings an end to its movement. And this is extraordinary. The mind actually starts to hate what it says is the world and the people in it because of their inability to satisfy this need that it has to unite itself. Instead of seeing that it's the movement itself that separates itself from the very thing it searches for. And so I'll tell you a story now in our remaining few minutes to exemplify where this stillness is and to give you an idea and hopefully we'll be able to express a certain exercise in this, something we can work at doing. There was once an unhappy, agitated lake. It was very unhappy. Its waters were always moving and moving and moving and moving. There was no wind. It was agitating its own waters. This was a lake that had the ability. It was bugged. It was just a bugged lake. And the reason it was bugged is because it felt incomplete. And the reason it felt incomplete was because it had a number of experiences that were just driving it mad. And some of those experiences were as follows. Every once in a while, a magnificent elk with a great rack of horns would lean over to get a drink of water. And the lake would look up and it would see this fantastic, beautiful, noble creature. And it knew in its heart, in the heart of its little lake-like life, that it should know something of this nature. It felt it could see it, but it was apart from it. It couldn't stand it. It wanted to be one with that elk-like life, with that great nobility. And then from time to time, it would look up and it would see a magnificent mountain, just that it was sitting in the background of itself. And it would say, I could look at the strength in such a mountain. I should have such a strength. But when I feel myself, and it water's pretty loosey-goosey, isn't it? I have no strength in me. I'm loosey-goosey. Look at me, I'm ripples. I'm nothing but ripples. And then one day, in its agitation, it was getting more and more disturbed when a wise old owl landed in the tree. And it said to the lake, look, you're longing to commune with the mountain and the elk and the trees and all the things that you see. That's right. So you're meant to that. You don't know how lucky you are. You're one of the few creatures. You are the only creature with that capacity. Now you, the human being, represents the lake in this story. What do you mean, said the lake, agitated, that it couldn't understand what the wise old owl was saying that was in its waters? He said, be still. Well, what do you mean, be still? Stop trying to be what you see. And instead of trying to be it, be still. What's that going to get me? Said the agitated lake. You'll have to see, won't you? And one day, the lake, weary of being agitated, thought to itself, I'm going to try this still thing. And it got still, and for a split second when it got still, in case you don't already know, there on its still surface was reflected perfectly the mountain. And in the moment that the mountain was reflected perfectly on the surface of the lake, the whole of that reflection penetrated every bit of the water of that lake, and the lake knew for a moment not that which it thought the mountain was, but it knew the meaning of the mountain, because the meaning was no longer apart from its own reflection. It had become one. This is a great spiritual mystery. Because the mind, its own... The way it conducts its, and that's really important to understand, the way it conducts its own life. The life of your mind is meant to be in the hands of your understanding. Instead, your understanding is handed to you by the movement of your mind. And it's not meant to be like that. What we're intended to have is a completely different order of life, in which we begin to realize that there is a completely different way for us to live, where we're no longer part and parcel being caught up in this constant looking for ourselves and trying to find out who we are and what do I mean and what is this, all of that, because the mind can do something different than what it has been doing when it understands itself. Now, what are we talking about? What is the reflection of that water? When you think about a lake and it's reflecting everything that's in it, isn't that reflection a perfect mirror? Now, these are ideas that actually have been handed down for a very long time, the idea of a mind that acts like a mirror. But no one understands what a mirror-like mind would be, so we're examining this to understand whether or not it's possible for there to be all this movement and at the same time perfect stillness. Can there be everything taking place in life and you not be apart from the meaning of everything that's taking place? Because if that was possible, then the love and the beloved would have their relationship, wouldn't they? The glass slipper, the purity would fit perfectly, and the individual who feels separated and isolated from life because their mind is actually separating from them from what they wish to know, that activity would come to a stop. So I want you to think now for a moment about a mirror. Just a mirror. Just think of your mirror at home. When you walk by the mirror, is the essence of the mirror changed? The essential element of the mirror remains the same. Doesn't matter what's in front of it. You can take that mirror outside in nature, let the wind blow, dust fly through, birds pass over, clouds run over. Everything go right through that mirror. And the essential nature of the mirror never changes, even though it reflects all of the movement and has through that reflection a relationship with all that moves. If you come awake right now while I'm talking to you, bring yourself back to wherever you are. If you're driving, be careful. Don't do anything dangerous. But you bring yourself back right now and you simply come awake and you allow yourself to see life. And you live in that nature that as it sees is not apart from what it sees, and yet it knows that the whole of life that's outside of it, in quotes, is not its essential nature. See, the mind takes everything it sees as being, it seizes everything it sees. It seizes everything it sees because it wants to find something of itself in what it seizes. And what I'm saying is that you can find something of yourself in everything that you see, but only when you stop seizing it. Because the nature, this nature of awareness, this nature of a quiet mind, it has no problems whatsoever with anything that moves into it and through it. Why? Because the essential self, as the mirror, knows that the things that move through it are non-essential to itself. And that relationship between what is essential and what is non-essential is a marriage. It's a union that takes place where self is no longer looking to know itself through things that move, but rather knows itself as the stillness through which all things move. And you can work at this. You can do it eyes open, eyes closed, at your office, doesn't matter where you are. You can simply bring yourself back into the moment and let yourself be still so that you recognize that everything that's moving that's a problem to you isn't the world that's a problem, but that you have simply identified with thought as it has gone out and looked for something to love. You don't have to search for love. It's the very essence of your true self.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.